Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Greg Baer, co-author with Ryan Rudzeski of When You Wonder You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids. This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change. On today's episode, we're talking with two special guests. Kathy Hirsch-Pasek is a professor of psychology at Temple University, a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, and the author of more than a dozen books, including most recently, Becoming Brilliant and School's Work. Ellen Roach is the former executive and still part of the leadership team at the Trust for Learning. She's also a developmental affective and cognitive neuroscientist studying how responsive caregiving gets under the skin to support children's emotional and brain development. Kathy and Ellen, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
It is so great to be here. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Ellen, I have to start with you because I just said words that I don't understand. Can you please tell me, what is a developmental affective and cognitive neuroscientist?
Yeah, join the club. When I started my PhD, I was like, what do all these words mean? And I'm finally learning. So developmental are those of us who study how human beings change over time. I am in the early childhood world with Kathy, so I'm most interested in how babies and toddlers develop in the first few years of life. Cognitive meaning, cognitive processes, language, executive function, our thinking brains, affective meaning our emotional development, which is my main interest. And neuroscience meaning I use neuroimaging techniques. So I use a technique called FNIRS, where we put a brain hat on a caregiver and a brain hat on a child at the same time. And we run our machines, we have them play together, talk together, and we look to see when and how their brains synchronize.
So in the introduction, I mentioned that this is a podcast focused, among other things, about young people and this rapidly changing technological world in which they are living and living into. And I mention that because you all have done something extraordinary. You've called attention of the world to some worries about artificial intelligence, AI, and babies. You've put together a statement on the risks of AI interaction to babies and toddlers around the world, and together with some former guests, including Dana Susskind, Ellen Galinsky, Angela Duckworth, you all are co-authors on this statement. Kathy, why on earth do we have to have a statement on AI and babies? What's going on here?
Well, I'll let you know that we didn't know we would need a statement either. And then all of a sudden, we're reading the paper and we find out that Mattel has made a deal with OpenAI. And then it was maybe a week later that we find out that Musk comes out with Baby Grok. And we're thinking, oh my gosh, these companions are now encroaching into the 0 to 3 space. And what are we going to see next? Are we going to see nanny AI, friend AI? And it turns out for kids who are 0 to 3, this is actually not just cute, it's actually dangerous. Because that's when the baby brain is being born, it's being developed, the connections are being developed. And we thought we better warn people right away. And Ellen's kind of the expert here. So Ellen, I know you and Rachel, you work together, Rachel Romeo. Can you just talk a little bit about behavioral neurosynchrony, a big term, but it has a lot to do with how baby brains grow?
Yeah, so we have so much evidence now over many decades of research about how very young humans develop. And the science, the evidence, the research rejects some of the ways that we used to believe that babies develop, right? We have these sort of stories and cultural beliefs about children and learning. We've gone through different eras of that over time. But what we know is that human beings arrive learning. We can't turn it off. We are seeking it from arrival. And we are pattern makers, meaning makers. We can't remember it because we have forgotten that period of our life. But they're in this perceptual feeling state. They are getting tons of input all the time. And when they get here, it's like a static that they have to make sense of. But I think about the difference between staring into the night sky and just seeing billions of stars, right? Not being able to make sense of them, versus staring into the night sky with someone next to you who's pointing and saying, that's the bear constellation, that's the swan. So babies have to do that. And the way that they do it, really the only way that they can do it, is with that guidance, right? That person, people, the caregivers, the older siblings. They're in these ecosystems of relationships. And in those relationships, they make that meaning. They find those patterns.
So Ellen, tell us about some of the myths we had, because what you've described is that our babies, they're learning out of the gate, right? All of those neural connections are happening. They're blowing up in their brains, and the brain is pruning itself to know, like, that's important, that's not important. What's going on in kids' brains, and what did we used to think was true, and what actually is true?
Several kind of old ideas about babies. Because they're not going to remember the first couple of years of their life, what we refer to as infant amnesia, that it doesn't really matter what happens during those years, right? We've pretty much gotten over that one as a society. But we used to believe that doesn't really matter what happens to a one-year-old, a two-year-old. They're not going to remember it anyway, right? That's one really important one. Another one that I feel like I'm always on a soapbox about is, even still, I hear people saying, well, babies are sponges, which suggests that they just soak up everything passively. We know that babies are not passive. I was just reading a new article about how we've massively underestimated even newborns, even in the first couple of days of life, who are active social partners, right? Seeking engagement, seeking interaction. I mean, this is some of the most interesting work in the last 20, 30 years, showing that infants are doing these sophisticated statistical computations to make sense of their world.
So Kathy, it makes sense then that caregiver presence is key to how our kids are developing, even at the youngest ages.
Well, very much so at the youngest ages. What the science keeps telling us is that the brain is really a social brain. We have evolved to be social. And that means you can't really sub it out. Mm-hmm. And you can't not have the caregiver or the parent in the room. And when we do that, we're not just pointing, which is part of what we're doing, at the things in the environment, but we're really, in a sense, waking up the brain itself. We're creating connections in the brain. We're helping the brain develop. And so when we come up with artificial, let's call that artificial beings, like artificial intelligence, these are the first ones on the market that can resemble, simulate what a human being is like. And we know that baby brains can be tricked into believing that they're real. We also know that adults have been tricked.
Let me be a little devil's advocate, or just, you know, wondering aloud with you all, because, you know, I think back to those days when my girls were babies and we knew enough to know to be present in our kids' lives, to ooh and ah, and to point to those stars, Ellen, and to do all of those things that I'm hopeful made us slightly good parents. And admittedly, there were times, you know, when the demands of life, whether it was work or unloading the dishwasher or whatever it is that takes over our lives, we needed some help, and we didn't have a nanny and we didn't have people around us. And so there were times that iPhone or a television was sort of a needed thing in our lives. And so I'm thinking, like, maybe if it's in developmentally appropriate ways, maybe these AI devices, tools, software could be incredibly helpful to incredibly pressed parents.
Well, I'm going to just chime in quickly, if I may, Ellen, to say I've never been anti-tech. I really believe parents have to have a shower and they have to make dinner and all sorts of things. I had three kids, so believe me, I get it. But where I have a problem is when tech tries to substitute rather than supplementing. Tech can only be a tool. That's all it can ever be. It can't be a substitute for you. Now, you still may want that shower, and God knows I did. There were things I had to do in life, and I used tech, and I thought it was a great thing if it was well designed, if it was of high quality. Right now, tech companies often want to bring things to market faster than we can even tell what's going on with them. And so maybe if we can have guardrails and can have principles on how to design that tech, it will be fine, and it'll be a lovely supplement. But what it sure as heck can't be is nanny AI. No.
Well, and it worried me, Kathy, to hear you describe our brains can be tricked. Isn't that right, mm-hmm. Ellen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing to say really clearly here that is different about this generation of AI interactive toys and bots that are about to come to the market is built on a lot of science, right? So children develop holistically, right? So if a child is in an interaction with her parent, many, many things are happening at once. We have evidence that children and caregivers are going to sync up emotionally in terms of their facial expressions, that they may sync up in terms of their heart rate, in terms of their breathing, in terms of their gaze, what they're looking at, gazing at each other, looking at another object. And we have emerging evidence that they are also syncing up at the level of the brain. And the most important thing to remember is that all of that happens in concert. AI can mimic only a very shallow set of those dimensions, right? It can mimic language, it can probably mimic vocalizations to some extent, but it's missing all of those other dimensions of development in the body, in the mind, in the brain. So we just have no idea how that's going to affect young children.
This is Greg Baer here with Kathy Hirsch-Pasek and Ellen Roach. And we're talking about the guardrails that we need as babies and toddlers around the world begin to interact with artificial intelligence. Kathy, you mentioned this statement that you pulled together with lots of others in response to some things happening in the world. How easily were you able to pull together some of these scientists and so quickly zero in on expressing the foundational things that are so important in the early years? And you're trying to call to attention to the AI developers and the toy makers and the media makers in this world.
So these scientists came together very, very quickly. And on our banner are some of the top scientists who are studying this in the world. Some are physicians. Some are people who are studying neuroscience. Some people are studying the social world of the child. Some are cognitive scientists who are understanding how babies learn and how we build brains as a foundation for how we will interact socially and intellectually for the rest of our lives. And as Dana Suskind said in an op-ed that she wrote, our job is to prevent us from doing any harm. And right now, we don't know that this won't be dangerous for young children. In fact, every indicator suggests that it might be. And I want to give you an example. It turns out that many, many years ago in the field of psychology, there were people who were studying frogs and ducklings. Now, it turns out that the duckling, when it's born, quickly follows its mother. But some clever psychologists asked, is it really, really, really about following the mother? Or would they follow anything that's moving? And so they literally just put a watering can on a circle that was going round and round and round. And the duckling was born and followed the watering can. Later, we have an example of the frogs. And the frogs, we know, will very quickly put out their tongues to grab that fly so that they get nutrition. But it turns out you can trick the frog brain. You can have a little black dot on a piece of paper, present it to the frog, and the frog will stick out its tongue. So let's think of the consequences of this. If the duckling doesn't find its mom and it just follows a watering can, probably not so healthy for the duck. And if the frog isn't getting any nutrition because it didn't get a fly, not good for the frog. What if these AI toys that are coming out for babies, designed to mimic as much as they can, and as Ellen said, not all of what we need, but some of what we need, could it throw off the very mechanisms, the social mechanisms that we know help build baby brains? We're afraid that it might, and that's why all these scientists joined in, because honestly, there's some urgency here.
Ellen, it sounds as if we are on the verge of a massive social experiment with a new generation,
yeah.
Right? 400,000 babies are coming into this world every day. Imagine the millions of young kids, to say nothing of their parents, families, and caregivers, to whom we're potentially subjecting a massive social experiment. And so here, scientists, celebrated scientists from around America and around the world have come together to say, These are the dozen or so things that are so critical to early development. We know these things. We've studied these things. We have the data and evidence. We need a great big pause button to make sure we do things right as we move ahead. So I have to ask, have any of the toy makers, the AI developers, the policymakers, is anyone noticing this cry from the wilderness?
I haven't gotten any calls yet. Kathy, I don't know about you, but I think not yet. I think Kathy spoke to this earlier, but this is not an anti-technology position. This is not an anti-AI position. This is about sort of the generational question, right? This is a first generation line of toys with no evidence suggesting that they are good for development, decades of evidence suggesting that they may be disruptive to children's healthy development. And the question then for parents who are going to be bombarded, I'm sure, with ads about how cool and novel these toys are, grandparents who think, oh, I'm going to get my child this cool new baby AI bot for Christmas because it's fun, it's novel, we're curious, right? That's part of being human too. We're curious about AI, that we need to have a counterbalancing message to that marketing, to that novelty, that allowing an infant to interact directly with generative AI is not, you know, could AI in the future support development in many ways? Probably it could. We're not going to know that for a long time after lots of research studies. This is more about the next few months, right? Are we buying this for children this holiday season? Are we buying this in the next year? Are we buying this in the next couple of years? And at this point, to me, that is putting your child into this social experiment, which I would not recommend.
So we know that the policymakers, the regulators, the executives who are wrestling with these issues are pressed with time. They're pulled in different directions by money. So if there are one, two, or three things, Kathy, that you would want them to know that ought to be forefront in their minds, what are those one, two, or three things?
I think the most important thing for policymakers would be don't do any harm. Please put guardrails on, so at least for the youngest ages, just by the way as we did with television. And I think here for the 0 to 3, just stay away from anything that's a generative AI toy directed to engage your babies. We don't need it yet. They're not a substitute. They're a supplement. For parents, I would say, let the buyer beware. There's lots that we can do with AI. I think there's some very interesting things coming out for television where you're going to be able to talk to the characters. How cool will that be? But let it wait until the kids are just a little bit older. And for both policymakers and for parents, we are it. Humans. Human to human interaction. The relationships that we form with our children, that's kind of the bread and butter of how baby brains are built. And it doesn't mean all the time, and it doesn't mean you have to be guilty when you have a shower. It just means that we need to recognize right now there's no substitute. And so given what we don't know, probably best to be careful.
And Ellen, for that mother, that dad, that grandmother, that aunt or uncle, what is it that you would want them to know as they look ahead?
Yeah, I will echo Kathy's point about this not being meant to give any parent a feeling of guilt around needing breaks, of course. And I think it's really important that when we think about what's needed right now, my primary concern is the lack of policy guardrails, because without that, parents then are just absorbing advertisements. And some of the companies that have signaled that they're going to put these toys out in the coming months have claimed that they will support learning and development. So I think the guardrails needed, and needed very urgently, are at more of a policy level to have some sense of what are the regulations needed for young children interacting with toys like this. And of course, we have many other regulations related to toys and what can go onto a shelf in terms of basic safety. But we have none of that at this point for AI. So it is a caution to parents that you may hear, oh, this toy can help your baby learn language. This toy can help your baby X, Y, and Z. The caution from the scientists is we don't actually have that evidence yet. And we have a lot of evidence that, as Kathy said, we should wait to expose young children to these kinds of toys.
Kathy and Ellen, as we close this conversation, what's one thing that parents or educators or developers or policymakers can do today to make our AI tomorrows a more promising place for all of our learners, especially our babies and toddlers and the caring adults in their lives?
My message that I leave the developers with is call us. We're happy to help. And we think that there are some principles that you can use to make very good products, to be helpful to parents, and maybe helpful and good for children. Maybe not the 0 to 3, but maybe later. So please, 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 let's not do the greatest social experiment on our little kids before we know what we're doing. It has too many risks.
And it is never more important than in those first couple years of life that we reconnect with these innate human capacities, curiosity, care, love, wonder, co-creation. It's how humans develop. It's how we evolve to develop. So hopefully, as we navigate AI, we can also reconnect to that knowledge about ourselves.
Thanks again to Kathy Hirsch-Pasek and Ellen Roach, who, as scientists, together with other scientists, are sounding the alarm so that AI respects foundations of human relationships. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.